On a mild Saturday morning in early October, I pulled on my rubber rain boots and trekked down past the tree line, past where kids were playing soccer. Members of a volunteer group called Friends of Brandywine Springs surveyed the remains of a historic spring and tried to find the base of another one.
The actual spring level is probably about 3 feet down from where the road level is, so we have a feeling we're going to have to go down here maybe 3 or 4 feet before we actually maybe hit some sort of foundation.
That's volunteer Ed Lipka.
And I've been a member of Friends of Brandywine Springs since 1994. We've been digging since April of 1994.
Yes, Lipka and his partners have spent over 20 years excavating an old amusement park that occupied the area in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
But mostly we just pick the second Saturday of the month. Sometimes if it's raining or it's too muddy to dig, we do all our measurements and calculations, and Mike goes and uses his CAD engineering drawing and is able to put some concepts together based on what we find.
That second Saturday of October didn't yield many findings, but they did find at least one thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a soft drink bottle.
That's a soft drink bottle. Yeah, see the shape?
This looks like the old Pepsi bottles.
The volunteers were slightly disappointed to discover the Cloverdale bottle wasn't manufactured in Delaware, but instead in Baltimore. And since rain was in the forecast, Friends of Brandywine Springs president Mike Chosik had limited plans for that October dig, instead focusing more on those measurements that Ed mentioned.
Yeah.
6'3".
Now hang on.
That's Mike and Ed taking measurements of a datum point, a starting point or point of reference from which all other measurements are taken. Ed held up a big measuring stick, like a giant yardstick, at the datum point, while Mike used a telescope of sorts to compare the height to areas of the spring excavation site. Over the years, the volunteer group has used archaeological techniques like the datum point to identify the corners of different amusement park structures, rides, theaters, pavilions, and more. With the help of photos and historical descriptions of each site, they use colorful markers to lay out the corners. It all started in the 1990s with the search for the park's elaborate entrance archway.
And if you look at a picture of this Gothic entranceway, it looks like it has sculpture on it, but it's just painted. You know, then it's festooned with electric lights.
That's archaeologist Keith Domes, one of the first professional archaeologists involved in the excavation of the historic amusement park. He says the park's novelty appealed to him.
As an archaeologist, you know, I've learned about Native Americans, I've learned about colonial, but who's ever excavated an amusement park?
He calls the volunteers avocational archaeologists and started teaching them different techniques, like a test unit, to help find structures like the entrance archway.
A test unit is what an archaeologist calls the square that we excavate. Some people call them test units, test pits, test squares.
Domes says at first they weren't successful.
Well, next year came around. No, we didn't find any evidence of a structure. We found tantalizing artifacts. We found fragments of souvenirs, the little bits of ceramic tchotchkes that you used to be able to get at the park. So we knew we were at the right level. We just hadn't hit it.
But they soon had a clue: trolley tracks.
You could actually see the stains of the trolley tracks. You could see where the ties were, and you could see where the rails once were. So we knew the trolley line came through there. So we knew the archway had to be to the west of that.
They finally found the base of the sign, along with remnants of the electric lights that would have adorned it.
This is long before rural electrification. If you were in Wilmington, you had electric trolley cars, you had electric lights, but if you moved out into the countryside, people were still using kerosene lamps. But here, at the end of the trolley line, was Brandywine Springs. And it was, you know, at night, the whole valley would be lit up. I mean, there'd be a glow that most of these farmers had never seen before.
After the electric sign, the Friends group, with the help of archaeologists like Domes, excavated other park sites, like the Ladies' Pavilion and the Exhibit Hall.
Through probing and some mapping and some really good guesswork, they started finding foundations of various buildings. And you know, and once they found a corner, they then would jump over and try to find the other corner.
But not all of the structures were that difficult to identify.
The Katzenjammer Castle, which was the most substantial structure that was built, was early cement block, you could actually see the tops of one or two blocks sticking up out of the ground. The pillars for the pool hall, I think one or two were visible. The rest were maybe 1 or 2 inches below soil.
The Katzenjammer Castle was called the Dreamland in a circa 1911 postcard.
It was sort of like a fun house.
Barb Silber, another archaeologist and one of Dome's archaeology students from the University of Delaware, helped restore another part of the park called Lake Washington.
It's nice to have a project where there's been a lot of different pieces of research, and they overlap, but they don't overlap. You know, so everybody gets a piece to figure out a new piece of the puzzle.
She said at the time she started working on the lake project, there wasn't much water.
It's a little swampy, a little marshy, you know, there wasn't really any water because it had been drained, you know, for at least, by that point, over 60 years, around 60 years.
But in the park's heyday, the lake was a scenic abode, similar to something you might see in Central Park today.
They had these little islands in the middle with a little pavilion and little grottos so you could take your, like, sweetie out there, row your boat, and have a nice Sunday afternoon part of the park.
Domes was also involved with this project.
People have no idea that, you know, their great-grandparents used to go out on rowboats and early roller coasters and act very much like teenagers do today.
And even though the park was supposed to be dry with no alcohol allowed, they found evidence those rules weren't always obeyed.
We found whiskey bottles that were not allowed, but obviously were dropped overboard. A woman's hat pin.
Many items found during the digs and excavation work, from women's combs to brass rings, have been preserved by a longtime volunteer who met me at the museum at Green Bank Station, where the artifacts are displayed.
My name is Melvin Schoenbeck. I've been working with Friends of Brandywine Springs for over 20 years.
Beer and soda bottles dominate the collection, joined by china Schoenbeck says is actually Japanese pottery. There are also coins and glasswork he's super glued back together.
We very seldom find all the pieces of anything, but sometimes we find most of them.
The collection also includes a glass gun.
I hadn't seen the glass gun before, but when I was a kid, for Christmas one time, I got a glass racer, and they're hollow, and they'd have a cork stopper, and they'd be filled with little hard candies.
Another gun would have been used to shoot some cast iron birds, also in the museum's collection.
Those cast iron birds?
Uh-huh.
They're from the shooting gallery. They were probably on a conveying device so they'd go across, and they shot at those with 22 rifles, 22 caliber rifles. Can you imagine that today?
Schoenbeck says he enjoys putting pieces of artifacts together, just like a puzzle.
I just, I got hooked, and I just enjoyed it immensely.
And his proximity to the park helped spark his curiosity.
When we first lived here, we lived just maybe a quarter of a mile away from there, and I used to take my daughter over there to play, and I remember what the kids thought was the Indian grave, which was turned out to be the Calibriot Springs.
It's this site the group focused on during my October visit. The spring's iron railings were always visible above ground, contributing to the initial idea of an Indian grave. But over the last couple of years, the Friends of Brandywine Springs have worked to dig down to the base of the historic spring site. The county also hired archaeologist Bill Liebknecht to build a retention wall to prevent what they presumed were soils from the hillside sliding down and covering up the site. But after consulting with the Friends group and others, Liebknecht discovered it was actually flood deposits from a couple of major floods that swept through the area and covered up the spring.
Mike came in and he brought his data, and we sat down and discussed it. Went back and forth, you know, they have their interpretations, we had ours, and you know, it's always like that. You can put five archaeologists in a room and get six different interpretations.
Liebknecht is putting together a report on the project, which he plans to complete soon. But the work of the Brandywine Springs Friends Group is not complete, and according to President Mike Chosik, never will be. Back at the spring site during the group's October dig, Mike's doing some dirty work to make sure he gets the measurements he needs.
I'm gonna get wet. I'm going in for a swim.
That water doesn't look too
appetizing.
Appetizing.
Well, this is Calibian spring water.
Yeah.
He's using a boat sump pump to drain water out of the spring.
There's two pipes that come out under here.
The draining is all part of a larger plan.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make a drawing, a cross section. As if you cut this thing right down here and look at it from the side so that I can put this all together in some meaningful way. But right now, I'm not sure where everything fits.
With the help of geologists and archaeologists like Liebknecht, several different layers of stone, Chester Park gneiss, marble, and limestone were discovered near the site, complicating Mike's original depiction.
When we broke through this mortar, we found there was another set of stones underneath. We went, oh my gracious.
But the spring is now operational, pumping about 1 gallon of water every minute into the nearby creek. And eventually, with Newcastle County's assistance, the plan is to create a Victorian-esque lattice-covered gazebo around the historic spring site similar to its original one, complete with picnic tables nearby for afternoon park picnickers and Pokemon Go players, and to entice residents to explore the park's many historical markers.
Of all things, Pokemon Go has drawn people to the area. While we were down there the last time, Mike and I, there was several young kids with their parents going through the park, and they're going, we never even knew this was here. This is great. And some of the signposts are actually in the Pokemon system.
I also saw Pokemon Go players on my first visit to the site, and supposedly some of the park's features are Pokestops. The group's next dig is scheduled for the second Saturday in November, and then they'll take a break before resuming work next spring. For Delaware Public Media, I'm Megan Pauley.